Alright, hello everyone. This is not Andrea Magucci, but you are with the competitive magic with the carnies, or at least two of the carnies. Javier and I wanted to record an episode about some more general topic in depth. Most of the time, you know, we, you know, on our regular show, we just kind of cover what's happened, or maybe talk about what we've done. But me and Javier really enjoy going into specific things in depth, and we've gotten a lot of feedback from people. I remember a lot of people at MagicCon Chicago definitely approached us and told us this, that they enjoyed it when we go a little more in-depth into particular things. So we thought that when we got time, we'd do that. Mengu's off in... Where's Mengu right now?
Prague, I think, or some...
That sounds right. Place, yeah, that's right, because he posted the picture of the giant pork knuckle, claiming that it was Czech, and then Strasky
true,
told him
yeah.
that he's never seen a Czech person eat it. That's right. So it is Prague. So... Mangrove's off casting Pick Your Poison in Prague, so that gives me and Javier the space to delve into something. And I wasn't really sure what, because Magic is a very broad game with a lot of topics, so I asked Isaac for ideas, and he said you should talk about mulliganing, because it was something that we talked about on Twitter recently, and I don't know, it's a really, really deep topic, right? And I think lots of people ask, that those are the two things people love to ask about the most, right? Sideboard guides and mulliganing, I think. It's such a, there's a very explicit nature to those decisions that I think makes them engaging. So that's what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about mulliganing today because we thought it would be interesting and wanted to talk about something more theoretical, I guess, than recent results. That about sums it up, right, Javier?
Yeah, basically we're self-proclaiming ourselves as the mulligan doctors. This will be the first, maybe the last time we talk about this matter, but I do think mulliganing has some similarities with cyber guides, but I actually think there could be mulligan guides also. They just don't exist, but most of the mulliganing processes are actually planned or should be planned before the tournament, right? Like, you yeah. should know a little bit if you should be keeping some type of hands or not. Obviously, most magic hands are quite unique, in a sense, but most of the time it doesn't really matter that much if you have one removal or one other removal, or one creature or another creature. It's often about like what matters in the matchup or in the deck. So yeah, maybe let's just go through the things. And we have a selection of hands. You know, Anthony yeah. posted on his Twitter, which you should follow, by the way. It's mm-hmm. MTG.
Steel. Oh, yes.
What's your Twitter?
MTG Bent Card, yes. Before, I never really did anything on Twitter, and I obviously only had the thing because Wizards makes you put one in the questionnaires they give you, and Mengu always wanted to tag me or whatever, but now I've decided I will actually post on Twitter, so now you can actually follow me on @MTGBentCard, and you can still follow the others, although you probably do, and if you don't, that's a severe dereliction of duty. at Javier D Magic and Mengu, of course. So but what you said about mulligan guys is actually really interesting, though. Because we kind of do make things like that when we prepare, right, Javier? That's kind of...
Yeah, we do. That's the thing. Like, we do, but that's also not that something that you hear much about. Like, you don't really hear about people being like, yeah, we knew we could not keep these hands. Obviously, we never agree on all the hands, but discussing them actually kind of makes us converge a little bit, I think.
Oh, it's just
because
important.
We discuss
yeah.
the hands a lot. Yeah, because well, sometimes you learn. You should not be keep. Usually, it's me learning. I should not be keeping some hands, and other people are learning. They should not be mulliganing some hands, right?
That is how it goes.
the point is, we both learn.
Yeah, although yeah, I mean, maybe this is the genesis of a new idea. Maybe you know, maybe in 2000 and yeah, maybe later in 2024, the new thing will be selling mulligan guides. You know, I think that might be useful. I don't know. I just think of, when you say yeah. sideboard guide, I think of people hawking their sideboard guides on Twitter for 10 tickets or whatever it is. And
honestly, I think a very good mulligan guide will probably easily impact more the win rate than a cyber guide,
if
you ask me.
No, I think that's very clear. Probably harder to yeah. make as well, but...
Absolutely, but once you have it, you know, just you can sell it for better value.
You know, we hadn't even, just to be clear, we don't actually have any kind of script for this, so this was actually just how we talking off the top of his head, and maybe this is a very good idea that we'll have to look at later. Huh, that's, wow. Well, when I say we don't have a script, I mean, I gathered up a bunch of hands that people had suggested in various places, on Twitter or Discord, things that people had messaged us, and yeah, we'll just go over some hands, and we'll try to talk, we'll talk about the hands themselves, but I guess the point is really that we want to talk about these kinds of hands in general in Magic, right? Like, we're not really talking about specifically, for example, Fires of Invention. We're not talking about the Fires of Invention deck that existed in Standard 5 years ago or whatever, you know, we just want to talk about Magic, so...
Yeah, I mean, ideally, we don't go very deep into the specifics of every deck, mm-hmm. but one, you have to go a little bit deep in order to decide the mulligan, and two, we probably will go too deep anyway, because that's how we are, yeah. But ideally, we will not go too deep.
Yeah, I just remember that the first time that we got this feedback that people liked this was, I think we got sidetracked for like 15 minutes about how many Shieldreds to play or something. And maybe we'll sidetrack, but that's okay. We don't have our big boss, Mangu, keeping us on time or whatever. We can just do what we want while he's eating pork knuckle or whatever they eat in Prague. So
I have to say, the pork knuckle looks good. I don't care if it's, you know, I understand it might not be actual typical, but I will have it. I like pork knuckles, the same.
Well, maybe you should have gone to Prague then.
Yeah, maybe next time. All right, that's all good, right. Shall we?
Yeah, so the first hand I picked out was a hand that I think generated quite a bit of discussion at the time. It was Marcio Cavallo's hand in the last game, so they're playing for the World Championship, and he's playing against PV in the last game of the World Championships. And Marcio is playing Jeskai Fires against PV playing Blue White Control. It's a big game, a lot on the line. So
big game. I mean, probably the biggest game in terms of like prizes that have been played in Magic, right?
Yeah, it was for a massive. I mean, it's literally one game for the World Championship. I don't know how often that happens, but
also was the biggest the biggest Worlds. Also, like it definitely was a big game of Magic.
Yeah, the one with the biggest difference. Yeah, for sure. So
exactly.
Why did I pick this hand? I'd say it was like 90% because I think it illustrates something helpful, and 10%. To bully Marcio a bit, because that's pretty fun to do in general. But yeah, let's talk about the hand. So we'll have an image up of it, but it's Castle Vantress Island, Teferi Time Raveler, Elspeth Conquers Death, Legion Warboss, and two copies of Fires of Invention. So what do you think when you see this hand?
Well, I was there watching Marcio, obviously rooting for Marcio because we prepared together and we're good friends. So what I thought about this hand was like, so for me, my impression was that this hand was like just a hand him or I will keep every single day at home, you know? Like, I just don't see myself or Marcio ever mulliganing this hand playing normal. I'm playing it like in any other situation or tournament. So the starters is like, this hand is a clear keep, in my opinion, to the point where that was not like a discussion or whatever. But obviously, there's this thought of like, well, I'm playing the Finals of Worlds, and it takes some kind of heart to keep a hand like this in that situation in a way, you know? I was like hoping Marcio will not give up into emotions, if that makes sense in English. Like, yes. Yeah, like, well, no one wants to lose Worlds because they don't draw a land and they cannot play the game at all, right? And that was my that's how I felt when I saw the hand, because we were there like watching them like real time, right? So we could actually think and feel things. It was an intense match to watch. And but apparently Twitter on the wall does not agree or did not agree. But
well, yeah. I mean,
yeah.
That part I think is, it's kind of an interesting element to the psychology of it, right? But that is, in fact, the reason that I started with this hand, because I think it's a pretty simple point, but it's one that kind of underlies everything, which is that you can't really let this, like, that's a specific psychological element to mulligans, I think, that really sticks out. That you can't, I mean, it's true of Magic in general, that you can't fear judgment too much. You can't let the idea that other people will judge you or that you might look silly cause you to make a play that's just worse, right? So I thought the same thing as you, Javier. You know, I was like, well, it would be so tempting to mulligan this hand because you just, I don't want to miss and have lost this way or that. Oh, you know, I'm on stream with, you know, however many thousand people watching me and I don't want, you know, the pressure is there. But, I mean, Master was a professional, obviously, and he does have that discipline. So he didn't give in and he did keep.
But it's tough. Even if you're professional, yeah. like, you know, you're only going to play these finals of Worlds once in your life. Like, it's like, you, like,
what?
It's
how can you say that?
Well, Mark, you know what
I'm
I mean.
Saying, I know what you mean. I'm all just right. saying, it's a bit rich for you to say you can only play the finals of Worlds once
all right,
when you did all it back-to-back.
Let's say you
but continue.
Okay, let's say you played like, say you played twice, all right? It's okay. still the same. Like, it feels like you're gambling, right, for Eid. But the reality is also you're gambling if you're mulliganing. Like, there's, like, not gambling, but, like, you're just leaving it to chance, but it's going to be the same. Like, you can mulligan into a bad hand. Like, some things can happen, and it's going to be the same. And just, like, but even if you're, like, a seasoned player, I think it's actually very hard. Like, I don't think any man of discipline makes this decision easy. Like,
agree,
we're human,
yeah.
and we're, you know, like, you're there playing Worlds in the finals, and well, Anthony might disagree, but it feels like a unique time to be there.
And, I'm just saying that's what you from your perspective.
I know. And you're like, I don't know, I cannot help these thoughts crossing my mind, and I'm pretty sure Marcy 100%. Also had those thoughts.
Well, yeah, you could see it on his face. It was really, really tough, right?
It's like, why? You know?
But
also, it's a 27 land deck, I think, 28 land deck, by the way.
Yeah.
Also important here, and definitely a matchup that was not particularly great for sideboard. And the big cards were Teferi and what. Like, this is pretty much like a very good hand, if you know what I mean, right? Like, in terms of like selection of spells. Obviously, ECD is not exactly the most important card here, but you could replace ECD, Elspeth Conquered Dead, with pretty much another decent card, and the hand would be the same.
Yeah.
In terms of a keep, I think.
Yeah, like, I joked that part of the reason was to bully Marcio to show this hand where he lost, but I actually think it's actually a testament to his discipline and, like, his strength as a player that he actually, like, fought down human nature there to mulligan this hand. Because I also think that although that you and he and I and probably a lot of other players who played a lot with the deck or played a lot of standard or are just more experienced with Magic know that this hand is good, I think that you must know that. I mean, I think I would have predicted that Twitter or the Peanut Gallery or, you know, the people, the commentators even didn't think this hand was particularly good, right?
Well, of course, but that's to be expected, though, right?
Like, right, but I think if
every single player in commenting or playing in Twitter will be as good as Marcio, Marcio will not be Marcio.
That's true. he wouldn't be making the finals of Worlds twice.
Exactly, right? So
right.
it actually does make sense in a way.
Yeah.
But it was kind of, I mean, I expected it to be like this, but not as much as it was. Like, it was like, we would see, like, actual somewhat decent players being like, wow, this is not the biggest blunder in Worlds or whatever. Like, what?
And that's just know? So crushing. Like, and he must have known that was a thing. Like, it's just so crushing to know that people will think that you make the right play and everyone is going to judge you. Well, not everyone, but so many people are going to judge you as though you had made, like, a horrible mistake if but it's wild. Yeah, the pressure is incredible. But, I mean, but this tells you, you know, the very best players, they go in literally the, you know, maybe this is literally the biggest stakes match, the game of all time in Magic.
It is,
and,
yeah.
You know, he still had to make the right call there. So, no matter how big it may seem to you, you have to try to fight that pressure, I guess. Fight that fear of judgment that, you know, maybe, like, there will be some one-landers that are correct to keep, or, like, some hands that are color-screwed that are correct to keep, and, you know, you have to fight down that urge to think, maybe I should mulligan, because I don't want to, like, play two blue lands, not casting the spell, my opponent will be like, oh, wow, like, what did you keep, you know? That sort of thing, you know?
Yeah, but he knows.
Don't
so,
be afraid.
Like, Paolo, when, yeah, exactly. I mean,
well,
Marcio
knows.
Like, Marcio knows and Paolo knows once he goes, I don't
Paolo
know, die, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody knows, and that's fine. But I was proud of I was, like, proud of my friend. It was like, all right, it's good that he, you know, played his
he
heart.
He made the
like,
right
he,
play.
He was like, you know, yeah, like because I thought this was very hard.
It is.
Like, I honestly don't know what I would have done. I think I would probably keep because I also have this, like, you know.
I think you do the same as Marcio in most spots.
Yeah, I think I do have the same, like, this feeling of, like, I don't care. Like, I'm just gonna, you know, my instinct is telling me to keep, and my instinct is why I'm here in the finals of Worlds. So it would be fool for me to actually not follow the thing that has literally brought me here.
That makes sense
which
to me.
Is this is the shortcut. I mean, I'm just saying this because this is a shortcut that I use for, like, I use in these situations when my human feelings are, like, you know, being like, I'm afraid of keeping this hand or whatever, but I'm like, then I think, well, keeping this hand's brought me here, you know, let's just keep doing the thing that has worked so far.
We call that intuition. Oh, yeah.
We do?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, Yeah, I think that's a good point. So, I mean, yeah, this was the choice for Marcio, and Paulo would understand, but I would like people who are not Marcio or Paulo to understand this as well. So that's why I picked the hand.
Yeah, no,
so much
definitely.
To talk about fires itself.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And also one thing I want to talk about this is, like, this brief. This is Finals of Worlds, the biggest match in Magic history or whatever, but it can also be your PTQ Finals, you know,
yeah.
Or your win and in or whatever. Like, pressure is relative, and it gets all of us, you know. Because I've seen people mulliganing hands as women a key because they were playing the win and in for a PTQ top eight or whatever, because it was huge for them, and they were like, well, I'm going to lose my PTQ top eight chance because I don't draw a land in this situation. And, well, that's not very recommend. Like, that's
yeah.
not something I will advise doing.
Yeah, like something that Javier's talked about to me before is that the size of the fight, you know, just to each person, it's relative, you know, like the actual material stakes don't really change how it feels to each individual person. So absolutely, like, just because we happen to pick the actual biggest game to underscore the point doesn't change that. You can feel the same things that Marcio was feeling, even if you're playing for something that's objectively much smaller, but to you it's not, right? Because again, not everyone is Marcio or Paulo. So
exactly, yeah.
That's good to know.
Better way of phrasing it.
Yeah, it's good to know in general. All right, so how about the next hand, which is definitely not quite as big, but it's kind of an interesting hand anyway. It's kind of the hand that got us to this discussion, I think, because I think Isaac had suggested talking about mulliganing because this hand had generated a little discussion on Twitter. So this was a hand from the previous modern format. When I say previous modern format, I mean when Fury was legal. But I think that's recent enough in people's minds we can still talk about it. So we will have the picture there as well, but it's a Swamp, Chalice of the Void, Ratchet Bomb, Ragavan, Fury, Fable of the Mirror Breaker, and Terminate on the draw as 7 cards against Team Rhinos, keeping 7 cards. And again, that's the previous one format, so I don't know. What do you think about this? It seemed like people were quite split on this hand, which was interesting.
Well, I mean, my first instinct is to easily keep this hand, honestly. Like, it just has Chalice, and the hand is basically the nuts if I ever draw a red land, but it's still like the nuts if I draw a red land in turn 2 or even 3. I also have Fury and Ratchet. Like, if I mana screw for 2 turns and they run on 3, and I still draw the land in turn 4, I don't think this is that bad. And still they have to deal with the Chalice, which is, like, kind of guaranteed a 2-for-1 anyway in the matchup. The way it works, right? They have to force a vigor, force negation. I mean, I guess they can force a vigor for 4 mana, but I mean,
they can also
just like this kind of
whatever. Like,
yeah, I guess. But if they say you, then my whole hand is enabled. So.
Yeah, that's true.
I think this hand looks good to me. I mean, not good, but like definitely better than the average 6 I'm gonna get, which is gonna be like 2 lands and some scam pieces or whatever. Or yeah, I think this kind is a decent keep to me. That's my instinct at least.
Yeah, I think I would keep this hand as well. Yeah. Specifically, something that I think is kind of important is that while this hand has obvious holes, I think the black-red scam deck has obvious had and has obvious holes in general. It doesn't really matter if the 7 might not be good in general, but I feel like the 6s are also just kind of horrible. as well, and quite liable to become 5s as well. So maybe this is a problem that I had with the black-red deck in general. But for me, I think it's kind of easy to focus on the downsides in the abstract of the 7-card hands and not compare them directly to your average 6s, I suppose. Again, that might suggest that a problem with the deck in general if your average 6 is also not very good. But that's also contextual, right? Like, I think in this particular matchup that black-red tends to struggle a little bit, especially on the draw against Rhinos, which makes me a little more willing to take gambles like this, I think.
There's also one thing I want to see here. Is like, so I tend to think of those hands like in a way where I feel like, okay, I need a red land, right? Like, if I draw a red land, the hand's great. I have like 2 or 3 turns, but I also have like secondary outs that actually make my hand decent. Like, if I draw an Undying Evil type of card here, my hand actually becomes quite resilient. Like, if they go Force of Negation, the Chalice of the Void, and then Rhinos on 3, and on 3 I go Fury, Scam Fury, well, it's still fine, even if a manuscript is still in one land, yeah. right? And that's also like a very big part of this hand being a keep, in my opinion. Like, if this didn't have a Fury and it wasn't another Wagaman, I would actually mulligan. But Fury not only offers like some kind of defense against the fast hands, but also gives like extra outs or like even runner outs of like my first address of Thoughtseize. You know, and the second draw is like an Undying Evil. Well, now my hand is actually pretty good, even if I don't draw a line in like two more turns or whatever. So I think that's also something to take into account here. Like, when the hands start becoming marginal like this, that's where the details do kick in. Like, I said in the Fires of Mentioned hand that if ECD was another card, it would be the same. And if the second Fires is a second Teferi, it doesn't matter much. Here, I think it's different. I think, like, things like changing Fury for a card, or if you don't have Ratchet Bomb and you have like a worse cyber card, this kind of stuff, I think actually will make the hand considerably worse and probably tilting it to a mulligan. But in this case, I think Fury gives enough out that, like,
yeah,
I think this hand is a keep. Like, I think it's close-ish, but I don't think it's that close actually by how the hand is composed. Like, if you start with Ragavan and then you draw like a Dying Evil, I don't know. There's a lot of run out of cards that make this hand great, and I think that's. I will definitely think it's a small mistake to mulligan this, actually. The more I think about it, the more I like a keep.
Yeah, I think something that I want to highlight there is that it's particularly important with these mana screwed hands to think about how well your cards scale, like, when you miss. So, for example, like, I think, like, Ragavan is probably one of the worst cards you could swap the Fury out for, and Fury is one of the best cards there, specifically because the Fury and the Ratchet Bomb means that you have some leeway to miss on lands and still win, right? Because you can catch up, you don't fall horribly behind. Whereas if you are behind positionally, then cards like Ragavan and, to a lesser extent, Fable, they get quite a bit worse, I think. So I think that changes a lot, right? Like, if I have more interaction but I'm mana screwed, I think I'm more likely to keep hands in general. Like, that's, you know, even beyond this particular example. Because those hands also tend to be composed kind of nicely, right? Where you're more likely to have more spells on your opponent because, well, you kept the one lander. So if you have a lot of interaction, that tends to work a little better. So yeah, I think like, you could change some cards, but I think that principle holds up.
Yeah, no, this hand is actually good. Like, Terminate even enables the grief out. Nah, this hand is just a keep. Like, okay, I'm gonna change my mind to, like, this is actual keep. Mulligan and this will be bad. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a keep.
I have concluded. Like a keep, like, it will be bad to mulligan, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you said the interaction, like, the classic one lander modern the draw that had like thoughtsy push, these kind of hands from the old gen decks or whatever, also illustrate what you say. Like, if your hand is just like thoughtsy and pushes, well, might as well just have one land. It doesn't matter as much. Yeah. You know?
Then I'm actively happy. I traded all my cards and my opponent is more likely to lose to flood. Like, it's actually.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I think that's a nice principle in general and what decides a lot here. Alrighty.
Yep.
Alright. What do we have next?
The big one.
Yeah, the big one. So here we have another really tough one from one of Simon Nielsen's many Pro Tour top eights. This one from Barcelona, Pro Tour, the Lord of the Rings. Wow, I just used the official name. No one's ever done that before without being paid to do so. The Lord of the Rings. Anyway, Simon was playing against Kalk in the Tron Mirror. And this was a very, very tough hand. We're probably not going to be able to go fully into it because, well, Javier can tell you just how complicated this was when we discussed it afterwards. But, well, it's an interesting one. We can talk a little bit about Tron Mulligans in general. They're kind of interesting. So, well, this is your wheelhouse, Javier. You're the father of Tron.
Well, yeah, I remember discussing with Simon after this for like a good 20 minutes, 25 or whatever. Definitely we're not going to make this podcast a Tron mulliganing with podcast. But definitely there's some stuff we have to talk about here. One of these, like, there's a lot of things going on in this hand. The first is, like, it's not a very good Tron hand in terms of, like, how well we can execute the Tron plan. The best you can do is just play Saga on one to play the Star and then Talisman. If you draw a Saga, a Tron piece, you can just turn four Tron. And if you don't, your best bet is probably just to draw mana and just play the One Ring and draw cards, or playing the Karn, the Great Creator, just hoping Karn plus the Licking Metal to be enough. That's not as good. Like, when you play a Tron deck, you're going to mulligan a lot because, you know, that's how the deck works. If you don't know this, you should probably check my article about playing Tron in Hyrule. It's easy to Google it. We can just put it on the link. Yeah. We'll link it, yeah. And But the mirror match is like something very extreme where you pretty much have to have like a turn three Karn, right? There's small details on that, but you need to have Tron and a payoff usually. This hand specifically, by the way, has the best payoff for the mirror match, which is Karn Liberated, which definitely should impact this hand, and it does impact this hand because it means if we actually get Tron, and that's a combination that exists, like if our draws are Saga, I mean, sorry, Mine and Tower, the game's over. Like, turn three Karn Liberated on the play is 100% win, right? That's also a factor here. But there's more into it, and I think this is another whole topic. And it's like, which hands can Tron keep on the draw once you keep Tron, like, when you keep seven on the play? Like, this was Simon against Kalk. So the thing is, there's also this situation. It's like a positional advantage where if Simon keeps this hand, Kalk cannot keep a hand like this, right? Because the keeping range of Simon will definitely slaughter this kind of hands. But this hand is actually decent against a lot of hands that will not be exactly bad from Kalk. Because this is gonna be landing on turn three Karn Liberator, Great Creator, even though that's like the weakest part of your draw, right? But that can be enough to beat some of the medium hands. I mean, at the very least, you guarantee Stone Rain on 4 and the such. So I think this is a very complicated position for Kalk, because if he's forced to have exactly turn 3 Tron into the payoff, well, you're going to often in Tron mirror matches, you win because your opponent mulligans to 3. And you might think that's something that doesn't matter, because you're like, well, if you're putting a mulligans to 3, you're winning anyway. But that's not actually true. That's not how it goes, because you're often the one also mulligan into 3.
Yeah.
For the same reasons. Like, we actually played, we were that like 4 versus 3, or because yes, we played in the PT. I think
that literally happened to us. Three, or, yeah, you went to 3, I went to 4.
Yeah, but that's not like a unique situation. Like, that's going to commonly happen, right? So it's not as free as, like, because the first instinct is like, if you're pulling one against the three, it doesn't matter, you're going to win. Well, that's not the case here in this matchup specifically for a lot of reasons. And I think this hand covers you against that, which is like sort of the reverse gamble. Like, it's a little bit of the opposite of the Marcio situation, I think, where this is like, well, I'm just keeping this hand that barely cannot go very well, just to make sure my opponent has to mulligan this kind of hand so I can get the equity from them just mulligan into oblivion. And that's interesting. I mean, it's a very, pretty unique situation, I think, but it does happen with combo decks, for example. Like, if you play Dredge Meter or whatever, this is like a situation where this can happen again. And it's definitely one of the situations where it matters the most who's on the play, who's on the draw, who kept seven and similar. But most importantly here, also being on the play, not only makes you on the play, but also you get to keep first, which is kind of funny. It's like an advantage. Like, usually it's a disadvantage, right? Presumably, because you
give information. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's different, you know, like, now it's like, well, the bet is done. I have kept. Up to you.
Yeah. That's tough. Yeah, because the signal you send forces your opponent down a particular line of action, which is, that is very unique, actually. I think this dynamic is, while it's fairly unique, I think it is replicable across like other combo matchups, like you say. Like, I know, for example, Tristan mentioned like a lot of things like this with Amulet, for example, where players keeping seven is like significant. But I wanted to highlight as well that this sort of thing, where a lot of people mention when they talk about keeps or mulligans, even with regular decks, they talk about, you know, did they keep seven? And I think it mostly doesn't really, like, if you're playing like, I don't know, Esper Control or Golgari midrange or something, it's not really a huge deal whether they keep seven or not. Like, maybe in an extremely marginal case, I'm sure you could invent some hand where it mattered, right? But I think for the most part, you only care about it when you're not really doing normal magic things. Like, it matters, like, how dynamic your keep range is. How dynamic your keep range is determines how much you care about your opponent keeping seven, right? So, for example, like, with these Tron matchups, like, I have to have this to keep, otherwise I mulligan. Like, I mulligan very aggressively. Then my opponent keeping seven actually does matter a lot. But, like, if you're playing against, like, Rhinos or Golgari or something, they could have kept, like, almost anything that had, you know, stuff that plays, you know, So it doesn't change that much. You don't really get that much information out of that. I think the fact that this is so contextual matters a lot, I think, when we talk about mulligans in general. And I think that's the way we would frame it, right? I don't know if you agree.
Yeah, man, there was one corner case, which is like usually Thatis effect, for example. I think Thatis effect on the draw when they go to six are considerably better in some situations. Specifically, if the deck is semi-synergistic. It doesn't have to be super synergistic, but if you're playing like a Thatis deck against Yawmoth, for example, I think the value of the card considerably goes high, because usually they're very limited on the amount of things they can do. It's also very specific about Thatis, not as much about Duress, because Thatis is the kind of card that can actually put, like, if they mulligan, well, they might still keep to Yawmoths or whatever, but then you can maybe take the Mana Dork or, you know, the other enabler. I think Thatis specifically, or Grief to some extent, gets affected a little bit more about this, but that's probably the only case I can think of in terms of normal Magic. I guess heavy interactive hands are also a little bit like this, but not. I mean, if you're playing heavy interactive deck post sideboard, or you know when you're playing and you're in the draw, and you already know if the hand was good or not, so it's not that likely to impact as much as in this example. Like, this example is like probably one of the biggest examples I've seen of this, like, ever. I don't know. I mean, it actually took me some minutes to realize this, like, because Simon presented the hand, I was like, no, it's a mulligan, whatever, and he was like, but are you sure? I was like, well, now you ask this, I have to think about it. Yes. And it took me like maybe, I think I started moving towards the keep after like good 10 minutes of actual analysis only of this hand, right? I mean, the thing is, I learned for the future, but I will definitely, without thinking about it, I mean, it also speaks of how good Simon is. he decided this on the fly, and I have more experience with the deck or whatever, definitely needed a lot of time to actually figure it out. But I think the best way to play this, because of this effect we're talking about, is keep, but also just go with Saga. Just try to catch the turn 4 liberated as much as possible. But because you give up the turn 3 karma, that also depends on how they're mulling. Like, if they keep 7, maybe it's actually better to go plant. It's kind of tricky.
It's kind of tricky, right?
Because this is a sort of like a semi-ball-off keep, but your opponent cannot do the same. Like, if they keep the 7, they just kept the
have it. Yeah. Right? That makes sense to me, because,
So it's actually funny that, it's not only that you're... I mean, depending on how fast they keep, fast in terms of, like, mulligan, like, how much they mulligan, you have to play one way or the other. And that's, you know, a whole next level of, like, actually taking that in account. Specifically because we're talking about it not mattering much at all. In most cases, right?
In this case, it does actually change your play. I think that's...
It does.
That's actually kind of important, by the way, that we also think about what we'll actually do when we keep... I mean, that's part of the... I think that's part of the decision anyway. Like, deciding whether we played Saga first or Power Plant first, because we've figured out what we're going to do with the hand, is actually pretty important, right? Like, I think that's something that's underrated in talking about this sort of thing. But, for example, like, if we know why we kept the hand, which is basically to present the most stable thing that beats mulliganing to Oblivion because they're forced to do so because we kept 7, then it does make sense to play Saga first. But I think that's not necessarily intuitive, right? Like, there's an actual decision there, and it's actually kind of intertwined with the whole keep or mulligan decision in the first place. So that's worth noting as well.
It is. Yeah, it's definitely like a very tricky situation, but I'm glad it was brought up, because it shows, like, simultaneously shows a concept that we think it doesn't matter much, but also shows the example where it matters the most. So I think it's a good thing to have both sides of things.
Yeah, the edge case.
Usually
it's really
combo decks. Yeah. Combo decks that are very extreme, and this, I mean, Tron is like a combo deck. So,
well, it kind of makes sense that we have like heuristics for like regular Magic, but then the combo decks are specifically not trying to do normal Magic things. So yeah, that makes sense. Alrighty.
It's also very common in bigger formats. Like, the more Vintage actually works like this a lot. Like, if you're playing Vintage, like, obviously the Bazaar decks or whatever, you know, there's the 2-1 kill decks. That's a different type of Magic. And in these kind of situations, Legacy is also more common than in Standard. If we went like Keep or Mulligan, we will never care about they're going to 6 or 7. Like, I think literally Standard will never impact, kind of.
That makes sense, right? Because the more regular Magic, I guess, the limited, Standard, whatever. That's what I think of as like normal Magic. And then, yeah, specifically like weird combo decks or Vintage or some other realm to me, usually. A deeply foreign realm.
Yeah, because limited, even if your opponent has like, I don't know, what's the best, like a Packrat or a Jite, which is like unrealistically good, right? I mean, they don't even exist anymore or whatever. But even that, it's not like your opponent is going to mulligan three lands for cards.
Yeah, I just think like they're still going to keep. Responsible.
Like, they're not going to mulligan into the Gita anyway. So even limited, even if it's, you know, the best. Yeah, yeah.
All right. It's just not really how magic works. Yeah.
Yeah, let's just move forward.
All right. So then we have a hand. Oh, a very recent one. From Pro Tour Murders at Karlov Manor. With Seth Manfield, champion, keeping this hand. So he mulliganed this hand, sorry, against. It's Simon again. Fancy that. Anyway.
Yep.
He mulliganed this hand, game everywhere. 2 on the draw against Simon in the finals. So he was playing Black Red Vampires, which is, you know, for the most part, a Black Red deck. And I think what we talk about is probably going to apply to Black Red in general, maybe. But the hand was Blood Tithe Harvester, Bitter Triumph, Vein Ripper, A Pathway, Cavern of Souls, Takanuma, and Mute Vault. And this was a mulligan for Seth.
Do you want to talk about what you think about it? Yeah, I will.
So I kind of think this hand is like the most common sort of trap hand for these mid-range decks in general, because you're like, I don't know, I take game actions, right? Like, it's just lands and spells, and you keep it. But I think it's quite often, especially when you play against linear decks or decks that don't line up specifically the same way that you execute your own plan, that these hands are often traps, I think, because they just play like normalish magic, and that's often not what you need. Like, for me, in this matchup, like, you need more interaction than this, for example. Like, it's easy to get distracted by the Vein Ripper here, and, you know, because that's a specific element to the Vampires deck, and that obviously does make this hand worse. But I think there's a lot of, like, random spells that I wouldn't like very much. Or if it was another land, for example, I think it would be very tempting for a lot of people to keep this sort of hand, but I think it's just not what you need, right? Like, I think playing one creature and one interactive spell is just not close to enough. It's not really a cohesive plan against Simon's deck, especially on the draw, where the Blood Tithe Harvester is not as much of a threat, where, you know, sometimes in that matchup you can just run them over, I suppose. But yeah, I think that was kind of my impression. Like, to me, I think it's pretty easily a mulligan. But I can also see, I think I see a lot of people keep hands like this in general when they play mid-range decks. Yeah, what do you think?
Well, first thing is, like, I've been joked around from my teammates, like Anthony, that I mulligan all the hands, I keep all the hands. I do perceive I keep similar, like, my mulligan strategy is actually somewhat similar to Seth. I have played with him a lot. And he's not only very good, but also mulligans very little usually. But there's one thing that we share is that while we are often seen keeping all kinds of one landers and five landers or whatever, we do not like to keep hands that are composed of bad cards, right? So you can have a player that keeps all kind of unplayable hands, but then suddenly they mulligan a hand with four and three spells just because, you know, sometimes you get the hand and you're like, well, this spells suck, so I'm just going to mulligan because I can. And I think this is a clear example. You call them those traps. I call these, like, autopilot hands. Like, if you're playing, watching TV, petting your dog, and just eating at the same time, you're playing these in a magical land tournament, you're going to keep it. Like, at least I am going to keep it, you know? But if you're playing in a PT, you're playing in semifinals, or finals, actually, and you're full focus, I think this hand is, like, kind of an easy mulligan on the draw. I will keep it on the play, because Harvester is much better, you know, like, having mulliganing, there's wars, there's a lot of things, but on the draw, like, Harvester is actually not good the way the matchup works. Bitter Triumph is acceptable, but also, I mean, it's a good card, but it's only the only thing the hand has. Like, you can just, like, a mulligan with a one mana spell, three lands, and any other two cards, it could be like a Harvester, a Fable, a Sorin, you know, if you compose a hand of three spells, three lands, and one of those spells is a one drop, it has to be better than this, like, easily. And that's actually, like, this hand is just, like, not going to win against most hands. Even if your opponent mulligans, I still think, like, it's not good. Like, this, you could be like, well, if your opponent mulligans, you're going to win more often with this hand. That is true, but it's also going to be true with six. You know, like, if I mulligan into Thoughtseize, my Thoughtseize is going to be better. And, you know, I mean, the mana base is good because he has four, like, you're not going to secure this hand, but I think this is pretty bad. I mean, I understand why you might look at this hand and be like, well, why don't you mulligan this against a creature deck? But I think if you go deeper than that, I think it's just good. You know, it's a good mulligan. I mean, you should mulligan this every time.
Yeah, I very much think so. And I think I don't know. The way I kind of think of it with this kind of pattern is I think a lot of the time, I feel like one of the most common, well, traps in mulliganing in general is people kind of mulligan to maximize game actions rather than win percentage, if that makes sense, which is also why they mulligan more of the hands that they're not meant to mulligan. Like, for example, like it's very easy for a lot of people to think they should mulligan like Marcio's hand, for example, right? Or they would keep this one. And I feel like the theme there is that they are trying to maximize just playing cards and not, like, actually winning the game. Does that make sense? Like, I see a lot of modern as well. Yeah. Like, people would just keep hands that like, are just random creatures or whatever and don't have the hate card or interaction. They need to actually win the game. And they're definitely going to get to play their creatures. 100%. They're also almost certainly going to die after doing that. Which is the problem,
but
right?
It goes, you actually summed it well. Like, it just goes both ways, right? Because if you keep the martial hand, you're gonna die without playing, and if you keep this hand, you're gonna die by playing. But I don't care. Like, the goal is not to play or make as many decisions in the game. The goal is to win the game. So we have to understand in Magic, often the way to maximize your winning equity involves exposing yourself in situations where you just will not have decisions. And that's fine. Like, I don't think there's anything particularly. I understand the theory behind decisions may mean you get to win an edge by making those decisions well. But what if a decision that involves no decisions afterwards is the actual one that's giving you edge? Because I think that's the most overlooked type of decision.
Yeah.
And this also, there's a lot of this can be deeper. Concept where, you know, actually shutting down the door for decisions actually can make your opponent not be able to get back the edge you have won. This kind of, you know, there's a lot of going on here also as well. But in terms of mulliganing, I think cleaning your mind of such things will probably, if you're a player that has those things in your mind when you're mulliganing, just wiping them out completely will definitely improve your win rate easily. Like, I'm talking about, like, automatically plus 1-2% level of actual dramatic improvement for real.
Wow, I think at some point we're going to talk about agency, I'm sure. Not now, but I feel
that could be another topic. I think it's the topic might be even deeper than mulliganing, so definitely a battle for another day.
Oh boy. Alrighty.
Or 2 days even.
Yeah. Okay, so the next one I think was, alright, so someone tweeted, and I thought this was an interesting point as well. They tweeted at us a hand. I'd like to hear discussion on mulliganing versus discard heavy decks. So in this case, it was 5 lands, Fable, Omnath as the Niv deck against Waste Not. So I think the principle is kind of interesting. Like, I mean, we can talk about that particular hand, but just this whole idea of keeping differently against Thoughtseize decks, I think is pretty interesting. Like, I mean, Waste Not is obviously a specific one in Pioneer right now, but we could talk about this in general, I think. And we talked about one of the cases earlier, right, where your opponent mulliganing changed how you acted as a Thoughtseize deck. But how do you feel about this thing where people tend to, like, it's kind of like a bolt the bird sort of thing, right? Like, people just don't mulligan very much against Thoughtseize decks, I think. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think it's a very powerful concept. I do think it's important, but I also think it's not the end of all means. Like, the fact, like, I will mulligan way less against a Thoughtseize deck. That is true. But it doesn't mean I will never mulligan against a Thoughtseize deck. So, like, a Thoughtseize might not be in their hand. And there's a lot of things you can do against Thoughtseize. Like, at this hand, this example hand, 5 lands, Fable, Omnath, as Niftolite, I will definitely keep against Waste Not. Also, Waste Not is a specific deck that actually is going to mind read you again and again. So, having 7 cards is more important. But if you play against a Thoughtseize deck, that's just, like, more proactive, well, there's just, like, you can just accept the Thoughtseize being better, and that's it. Like, you do not have to keep a hand that's bad against the rest of their deck just because it's bad against Thoughtseize. Sorry, good against Thoughtseize. And I think there's a very big difference in that. Like, I think there's a very big difference between Thoughtseize out of a reactive deck that's trying to control you. Let's say I'm playing an aggressive deck, and I'm playing against a Black, Red, and Pioneer. Well, my opponent is playing Thoughtseize as a removal. In that case, well, I'm playing against Thoughtseize plus removal, so I will try to mulligan way less. However, let's say I'm playing control against a combo deck with Thoughtseize. Well, there's no reason for me to be like not mulligan and keep a hand that actually loses to my opponent's deck just because the cool thoughts is my good card. I think those two the situations are very different. And I think against the discard decks that are actually like mid-rangey, I think my heuristic is to actually mulligan very little in that way. But once the type of deck changes, because there's a lot of Thoughtseize decks, right? Once that's not true, then I think, my experience at least, my perception is that most players, even decent ones, actually do not mulligan enough against Thoughtseize decks that are not specifically attrition Thoughtseize. So the shortcut will be like, if your opponent Thoughtseize is basically a card they can exchange with 10, 20 cards of their deck, then I will probably be mulligan way, way less because they add up. But if Thoughtseize is like a unique effect my opponent is playing, even discard spells, it could be like six discard spells, it doesn't matter. Like if I'm playing control against a deck with six discard spells, but they are like the only thing they have on that angle, that's still not going to make me keep bad hands on that regard.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is exactly the point that I wanted to illustrate, I think. I feel like I just hear way too often people just say, I'm going to keep because I don't want to mulligan against a Thoughtseize deck. But I think the whole idea of a Thoughtseize deck is so loaded. Like, there's just so many different decks with Thoughtseize that use Thoughtseize differently that you really have to ask yourself.
Yeah, it's like a black deck. Yeah.
Why did they put Thoughtseize in their deck? Because I think the whole thing where people don't mulligan is that they don't want to get one for one and lose the game that way. But is that what your opponent is even trying to do? Like, you illustrate, that's not the case for a bunch of these combo decks that will try to Thoughtseize you later. Or like mid-range decks against control decks that are, you know, I think mid-range decks are often going to try to punch a hole with Thoughtseize later rather than using it aggressively or to try to attrition you out, right? Like, it depends on the specific mid-range versus control dynamic. It changes quite often. But I think that conventional wisdom just doesn't really apply as much anymore. Like, I think modern day Magic is way more complex than a lot of the way the games used to be. Like, I think older Magic card advantage mattered more, right? Because stuff would trade one for one more easily, and then you would draw cards and you would be ahead. But now the games are a lot more dynamic, and other things matter. Like, tempo tends to matter. Like, there's always shifts between whether tempo matters or card advantage matters or specific combinations of cards matter, and that happens more because cards are more complex and do more things now, right? Which I think is a good thing. But in terms of whether that makes for better gameplay or not, I think it does. It's not really here nor there. It's mostly that it just makes it so a lot of those older heuristics don't hold up, and I think this is one that really stands out to me. I think people overvalue card advantage a lot, and I think it causes people to assume too many things. Like, Thoughtseize used to be a card where you just 1-for-1, 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 divination, I win the game. But yeah, now it's different. Thoughtseize is a pretty multifaceted card, I think. So yeah, and I think that was you really hit the nail on the head there, where you said the Waste Not deck will actually try to mind rot you out of the game. So yeah, having seven, like, any random card, you could have like a totally uncastable card in your hand, and it would
a blind still have card, value. Yeah.
Yeah, a literal Uno card would be fine. But against Black Red, it's interesting, because what they're doing, it actually depends on the deck that you're playing, how the matchup goes. Like, do you remember from testing for Chicago, where when we were playing as Matisse Incarnation deck, we found that we needed to mulligan more against Black Red than we realized? Like, we were actually started winning more, we started mulliganing more, because you need specific cards against them. In that matchup, specifically to fill people in, that the Black Red deck has to be the aggressor, and if the Incarnation deck shuts down their early offensive interaction, the Incarnation deck usually wins, because it's quite easy for the Incarnation deck to just make up all of the card advantage later. Like, you just absolutely drown the Black Red deck in cards, right? Because you have a million card advantage cantrips and things like Incarnation that convert them to more cards. But yeah, when we're just keeping hands because we don't want to get Thoughtseized out, like, we would just die to like Bloodtithe Harvester and Bone Crusher Giant and a Duress later or something. And so we found that mulliganing was actually super important. So yeah,
it took us a while, actually, and we are experts of the Black Red. Like, it's not like it's not a super easy thing to realize. You know?
Yeah,
you're losing games because you open like a hand of like Omen of the Sea. I don't know, just some random cards in the draw that were good, and we're like keep obviously because it's Thoughtseize and a mid-range deck, whatever. But it was not true. But you have to identify every situation in a different way. Also, like, you know, you could play like a Grisfang the other way around. Also, you could be like, well, it's a combo deck, but in certain matchups, they will not operate as much as a combo deck. You know, and there's a lot of, I mean, I think Magic, as Anthony said, like, the games are more dynamic, but also the matchups, so it means, like, every matchup is unique. Even a matchup you think you know, if they have one more card that's new and change the concept of the deck, because maybe that's true against Black Red Midrange, but that's not true against Vampires, we don't know, right? You just have to evaluate, know the matchups, and just don't follow the Boulder Bird and don't mulligan Xthalassia's deck. That would be my advice if I had to give one.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's kind of funny because we talked before about how in some spots your intuition guides you well, and in other spots your intuition is actually very dangerous, because doing the intuitive thing was making us spew a lot of percentage in testing before we realized that we had to conquer it. So I don't know, kind of learning how to deal with intuition is pretty important there, actually. But that was a good point to have to highlight. What do we have? Oh, all right, the opposite of thought seizers, cantrips. Someone else on Twitter asked us about, I guess it's pretty similar across both Modern Murktide and Pioneer Phoenix. They talked about the one land plus two cantrips and, you know, other cards that you can't play off them. Well, you know the kind of hand I'm talking about, right? The whole, like, land.
Yeah, the classic, yeah. Considers out of hand.
One yeah, hand the only spells I cast are considers or whatever. And then they also asked if having more cantrips in case you miss on the first two change it, whether that changes anything. So I guess we can talk about these cantrip hand heavy hands in general, right? Like, I think that's... We don't really have to go into specifics here. Maybe we can have... I'm ready to throw up some examples on the screen or whatever, but I think the concept's kind of interesting. Wow, we have discussed this a lot, haven't we?
Yeah, I mean, the long story short is they are pretty much always a keep unless you need something else out of the matchup. Like, obviously, if you're playing Morte, then you need the pressure one, and, you know, obviously, assuming the cards are good, right? If you need pressure or you die, it's mulligan. If your hand is, you're playing a mirror match, you have to keep. If you're playing Phoenix, if you mulligan a hand that's like Island, consider, Treasure Cruise, Prankster, Phoenix, Shredder. Well, that's not good magic. You know, you have to keep those. Obviously, it depends on the rest of the cards, but as long as the cards are good, I'm just always keeping this hand. That's a feature of cantrips decks. Like, the ability to keep these hands are actually, like, is actually one of the biggest feats of these decks, because they mulligan well less, which means that you're getting card advantage in a way. Like, on average, if you're playing a Phoenix deck and you're keeping those hands, you will have more cards in your opponent. In the mid game, right, and that adds up with the creases in the same. Obviously, there are some situations where it's not good to keep. There are tempo matchups. There are matchups where you need a Shredder and you die. Like, there are things, but overall, like, if I'm playing in the dark, particularly in the play, I don't think I've ever mulliganed. I mean, maybe ever so. Like, if I have four Phoenixes, you mulligan. You know what I mean? But, like, normal hands with four different cards.
Yeah, I did want to highlight the gap in between, though. So I think that kind of hand, where you, if you have good spells, and I'm just always keeping these hands, for sure. But I think the space in between is kind of interesting, where there's a lot of these hands that are sort of borderline, where I want to mulligan, because I feel like if the power of the cantrips is that they are card selection, then a lot of the time, if I'm forced to look for specific things, which is usually going to end up being another land, then I'm losing power in those cantrips. So I do think there is more weight on the other spells being good than... I think we might actually differ slightly on this. I think I might mulligan slightly more of these hands than you do.
No, I'm gonna put it in an easy way. I think you will agree. So if one of the cantrips was a land, would the hand still be a keep?
Oh,
if the answer is
usually yes, yeah.
Well, if the answer is yes, I will keep. If the answer is no because the hand's shit, then I mulligan.
Yeah,
that's kind of how I think about it.
Yeah,
do you agree?
Yeah, I think I would agree with that framing. Actually, that is probably a lot simpler than what I was going to say. But
that's what I use usually.
Wow, that is actually a lot more straightforward than... Well, I had a whole thing. Okay, that's actually a lot simpler. I think, again, but that also goes back to a theme that we had before. Where we were talking about caring a lot about the spells, right? Like, we actually care what the spells are a lot and not just the quantity, which I think is something that's often very easy to reduce to, I think. So I guess that question was ended up being a lot easier than the other ones, huh?
yeah, but also because I personally feel like this question is a question I have made to myself too often, also too recently. Like, we have this question a lot in our hands, for like in the PT also. So
absolutely,
coming from a fresh PT, it's easier.
Yes, that's true as well. Okay. And then of course we have to, I guess, we're kind of running low on time, so we have to go to the last hand, the hand that we've referenced many times, and I don't know if we've ever really explained this fully, have we? I don't know, but it feels like we have to cover it.
I'm pretty sure it has been mentioned in the podcast at least.
Did we fully discuss it? Like, did we actually justify it? Because, you know, it's...
All right. Let's try.
Okay. So
I don't even remember the matchup.
It was Gruul. So specifically, the legendary hand, the Andor hands, that we often talk about because Javier asked in our testing server, is this a keep? And it was a hand that was a Blood Tithe Harvester and six lands, right? And the bullying was...
On the play.
On the play. And the bullying was intense. He got trolled so much for it. Because someone thought it was... I think Ginky thought you were literally trolling. Like, he just thought you were doing a bit. But you were very sincerely asking, is this a keep or not? And since then, we've joked a lot about it. Like, I've often claimed that... This is a little bit more elaborate, but I've often claimed that it's a lie, that we just are trying to slander you by saying you kept this hand. The funny thing is, you actually did keep this hand. And also, that I think
of course I did.
And I would keep the hand too, but I think it's way funnier to paint it as completely unreasonable and that it's a lie. It's just literally the opposite of the truth. But yeah, I don't know. It was interesting though, right? Like, Six Lands Harvester. So we should at least talk about it. Not least because Matti asked us to. So
start with the lands were actually perfect. I think it was like perfect dual lands with Sokensan. It was two duels. Den of the Bugbear, Hive, Takenuma, Sokensan, and two other lands.
Yes.
Which, that's something. You know, I give a lot of value to those things. Like, I think creature lands, like spell lands or whatever, actually get some value out of this type of hands. So it was against Gruul Midrange, right? The one with vehicles.
Yes. That's right. So, I don't know. Why did you keep it? You should explain, because I think it's not intuitive.
Well, I kept it because... I don't remember some of the details, but if I have to reason now, I mean, I think it's a keep because so that hand's actually pretty good at applying pressure if you draw one more piece. I think the matchup is bad enough that you actually want to be the aggressor, like, because you will not... That Gruul was the deck literally built to beat Black Red, right?
Yes.
If you remember correctly, it was the Akron War, Sky Sovereign,
Chariot,
all the cards. Like, all the cards were that good that Thoughtseize was like not that good because you will Thoughtseize them. It will be fine because you could take an elf, hopefully mana screwing them. But it's like you could Thoughtseize them and they will have like a Akron War, ship, chariot, and you'll be like, okay, I mean, I'm gonna die regardless. Like, so it was not like a matchup where Thoughtseize was as good. And I mean, honestly, maybe it should have been a mulligan, but
wow.
I felt like Harvester actually, or Harvester into something was a very big part of the matchup was.
Yeah.
Like, most wins were like, kill the elf or disrupt the elf before they can actually put the four drops, and then do your thing. Kroxa, by the way, was also very good. Very important piece of the puzzle often. Kroxa was very good against that deck. And Kroxa works very well with his lands. Like, Takenuma often single Hally enables Kroxa, which is a subtlety, like, that might not be obvious, but it does happen. And also, Sokensan is like a spell. Like, 2-2 haste. Like, if I draw like a 3 drop, for example, right? I can go like Harvester into Trespasser into Sokensan into Attack with the Den of the Bugbear. That's already like my hand has a 2 drop, a bad 4 drop, and a 5 drop. But also, everything I draw gets much better. Plus, I have a blood. So I actually, like, obviously, if I draw 2 lands in a row and then blood draws another land, it's very bad. But there's a lot of cards that actually make my curve sort of aggressive. Like, let's say I draw a Fable, which obviously is the best card, right? But Fable or Trespasser. Then I go Harvester, Trespasser, Sokensan, Bugbear. Or Hive. I think that's an actual acceptable hand. And I think my hand on 6 does not necessarily feel better than that, just because I don't want to trade resources. Like, if I go like Thoughtseize, Trespasser, removal, that's gonna lose against their deck. Like I'm not gonna win that game because the top deck is gonna be huge. They just have like a million cards that destroy me single hell. Like, this, that deck was a minefield. The whole Gruul deck was incredibly good against us. But I think this hand could provide that. Specifically, the creature lands were definitely a big part of the keep, in my opinion. But also, you know, the tails. So I was like, if I draw Kroxa, Takenuma does. If I draw like, I could also draw 2 spells and turn 3 go like, you know, second Harvester of Thoughtseize or push or whatever. Like, if I draw like a big card, I could maybe just sacrifice a Harvester to kill an elf on turn 3 and then play a Shield Red. You know, depends on how what I draw. Obviously, it's a hand that's gonna be bad if I draw 2 lands, but I think if I draw like 2 spells, for example, my hand is better able to actually do what I want to do in the matchup versus pressure. It's just based on how bad the matchup was and how bad Thoughtseize is in that situation.
Yeah, like, the whole deck is resistant to interaction, and so I guess the way that I would frame it is that we only ever beat Gruul when they naturally stumble anyway, and we need the pressure is the most important thing by far. So either way, you're really gambling on having interaction plus pressure. It's hard to like find both of those in an effective way because the interaction is so poor. And the creature lands are much more effective pressure than, well, yeah, having creature lands plus harvester is a much bigger deal in that matchup, I think, than anywhere else, oddly enough.
But also Sokensan. I think Sokensan is, like, the hand might be a mulligan without Sokensan, but Sokensan is a card that I think it's often overlooked. I would say underrated in terms of keeping a mulligan. Like, it's a bad card, obviously. It's 4 mana, raise the alarm. But it's 4 mana, raise the alarm, you know, also on the other side. Like, it's still a bad spell, but adds up in damage, specifically in games where you're going to be scrambling for, like, the last point of damage. The card might actually be good enough to...
I'm often surprised by it, yeah.
You know, to change a keep for to a mulligan, I think. I'm pretty sure that hand, I think if it doesn't have Sokensan, it's probably, like, maybe a mulligan, but it can make a difference there to me.
I think maybe a mulligan is probably a strong statement, but yeah, I understand what you're saying. I think the Sokensan is important as well, yeah. Because it actually is a play. We actually have... Like, we're actually not that far from doing some from using our mana every turn, right? After two, from if we draw 3, we have 2, 3, 4, 5, like you say. So
yeah, exactly. And that's a lot. Like Sokensan is a bad, it's a bad photo, but it's a photo also scales pretty well with the Denethor Bugbear because at some point the one wants to swarm people, and that's also a good angle to have in a deck like this. That's like a Thoughtseize deck or whatever. But yeah, I mean, I do believe there's a chance that Hang was a mulligan, but I think it was unfair that it got bullied so hard.
Well, that was the whole point of the bullying, because it was unfair. It was so much more fun, you know. It's way more fun to bully people for things where it's totally unjust. I mean, it's like how we bully Stefan for slow play. Like, he doesn't even really play that slowly. He just has, like, a bunch of unintentional draws, so it's funny to, like, call him things like slow play Stefan, and it's so fun because he's so outraged, because he knows it's unfair, and we know it's unfair. And that's what makes it fun, you know?
You're so evil. Do you know that?
It's not just me doing it. And there's also other people
podcast,
that have asked to do it.
Podcast people know. Yeah. Now they know.
Oh, I'm sure they would have figured it out already. Alrighty. Well, those are all the hands that we picked out. That was fun. I think that was actually pretty productive, right? I think we went over a bunch of things that I think aren't talked about enough, I guess. It was pretty interesting. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was fun. I think, also, let us know if you people actually liked it, because this is a different type of content than we usually do, but definitely something, you know, we might be open to do some other time. That's pretty much it, actually.
It's so much harder to do these without having Mangru. You know, Mangru just always takes the reins, you know, he kind of directs us as we go along, and now we just kind of stumbling around talking about Magic, but that's kind of what we wanted to do.
But we're lost in a way now. We were lost, you know. We missed Mangu, but yeah, I mean, this is good. We'll be open to have some other topics being discussed.
Yeah, suggesting
some of these, but definitely, yeah. I mean, we're absolutely very open for the figure, because this actually happened because people talked to Anthony about this, right? So definitely, we're open for that kind of suggestion.
Yeah, tell me on Twitter what you might like me and Avia to delve a little more into in future, you know, just general theory topics, or if there's a particular deck we could talk about, we could get to an expert or whatever. But I kind of love the theory things a little more, honestly. But you know, whatever's good, it's all good, you know. So
all right, let's whip it up. Right, next time we'll be me, Mango, and Anthony, all three, and just doing the you know, the new things again. Mm-hmm. Probably not more pick your poison content.
That's
anymore.
What you think. That's what you think. I think Mango's still in love. I think.
Well, I am still. I still have not cast the card, I think, but I will eventually. Anyway. And yeah, thanks for listening. And you know, if you want to support us, there's the Patreon on the Patreon one. And that's it, actually. See you in the next episode of The Commies.
Alrighty, cheers.
Bye-bye.